Welcome to Sports Spectrum, the sports and faith podcast that brings Jesus back into the conversation. Here's your host, Jason Romano.
Welcome, everyone, to Sports Spectrum. I'm Jason Romano. Great to have you joining us here today on the show. Want to always encourage you to go to our website, sportsspectrum.com. Lots of great content there. A daily devotional, 6 a.m. Eastern, to start your way right with God. You can go right to the website, and it's the first thing you'll see, the Sports Spectrum Daily Devotional at 6 a.m. Eastern. So when you wake up, go to the website. Great 30-second to 1 minute to 2 minute read, just to get your day started right with God. And then, of course, we have this podcast, which is out there every morning as well on our website. But then we have content all day long, articles on the intersection of sports and faith, featuring athletes, coaches, anyone that can connect the world of sports with the world of faith and Jesus. We're going to write about it. And so that's actually a challenge to you that are listening, to reach out to me. If you have a great story that you think is worthy of us covering, send me an email, jason@sportsspectrum.com, jason@sportsspectrum.com. And it doesn't have to be a Major League Baseball player like Danny Graves, who's our guest here today on the show. It can be a high school coach. It can be a little league, a minor leaguer, a young toddler. It could be all sports. Whatever it is that connects sports and faith, we want to hear about it. We want to be able to tell those stories, whether it's on our podcast or through our website and the articles that we write. So please reach out. Give me an email. Send me an email, jason@sportsspectrum.com. Would love to hear your stories and your ideas for guests and people to cover on the world of sports and faith. Today on the show, we welcome Danny Graves. Danny is a former Major League Baseball pitcher. He was selected in the fourth round of the 1994 MLB Amateur Draft by the Cleveland Indians, played his college ball at the U, Miami University in Florida, made his Major League Baseball debut July 13th, 1996 with Cleveland, and then came over to the Reds in 1997, and that's where he spent the majority of his career. From 1997 to 2005 with the Cincinnati Reds, had 182 career saves, a two-time Major League Baseball All-Star selection in 2000 and in 2004. We have a couple good MLB All-Star stories for you on this podcast. He's also the only Vietnam-born player in the history of the Major Leagues, born in Vietnam. And I wasn't expecting to spend a ton of time on that sort of Vietnam history that Danny is a part of in Saigon, South Vietnam, but we did, and it was fascinating to me, a powerful story, and Danny has a lot of really great, not only stories, but a lot of great thoughts on just life and all of the things that he's experienced and went through, and his faith story is a really good one too. He was in a really, really deep, dark place for a while, hanging on during his baseball career, and then God got a hold of him through his current wife, and really cool stuff here. You will love Danny Graves. Take a listen to our conversation with the former Major League Baseball pitcher, now current baseball analyst with the Cincinnati Reds Radio Network, Danny Graves, here on Sports Spectrum's podcast. Danny, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Jason. I'm so excited about this, and I really appreciate you asking me to be a part of it.
Absolutely. It's been fun kind of going back and forth a little bit on social media, on Twitter. And then just before I hit record here, I just asked how you're doing. You said you were finishing up a little homework. So I presumed it was getting ready for a game or scouting or tracking something, but it's a little more than that. You're actually doing real homework, aren't you?
Yes, that's funny that you call it real homework. Yeah, it's real homework that I haven't done in 25 years. So it's not homework to get ready and prepare for a baseball game or scouting or playoffs or anything like that. It's actual school. I've enrolled back in school at the University of Miami. I do all my classes online. I actually had to go back recently and physically be at Miami to take a final exam for a finite mathematics class, which I did pass, thankfully.
Congratulations.
Thank you. That was a very stressful time, let me tell you, because that finite mathematics is not easy. And but it was a great challenge for me. But so, you know, back to the story of going back to school, I was 30 credits away from graduation. And of course, when I left Miami. I left as a junior. I got drafted and continued to play. My career kind of went on for a long time and never really had time to go back. And by the time I retired, I just didn't think that I really needed to go back because, you know, I was still working and still doing stuff in the baseball world. So
yeah.
I decided let's just continue baseball. So anyways, long story short, a former teammate of mine, when I was in school at Miami, I was a freshman. He was a senior. Gino DeMari is his name. He was actually an assistant coach at Miami for years now. The head coach, who was Jim Morris, retired after 20 plus years, and Gino got the job, got the head coaching job, and it's something that he'd always wanted, something that he looked forward to for years. So I called him to congratulate him, and I jokingly said to him, "Hey, man, if I decide to go back to school, will Miami pay for it?" And honestly, total joke. I wasn't expecting anything. He told me, "Yes, we absolutely would pay for it." And I said, "Wait, are you serious?" And he said, "Absolutely serious. We'll pay for whatever your scholarship was worth. We will take care of that." And at the time, you know, 25 years ago, they were giving away full scholarships. So I thankfully had a full scholarship. So everything was taken care of. Come to find out, everything wasn't taken care of. I had to pay my some of the fees that, you know, go along with re-enrolling and all that. So I had to pay like $100 to get back into school, which I'll pay that any day of the week. So that's what I'm doing right now. During the off season, I am working on my college degree. This was something I started in the spring, and I hopefully, if I stay on track, I will be done this coming spring and will be able to walk and get my diploma.
That's awesome. I'm
pretty excited about it. Yeah. You know, it's amazing. God's timing. Cause all these years away from, you know, that I retired, I could have done this, but you know, in my walk, I was lost at times and trying to figure out what my life was going to be. And here he just throws it at me and says, "Here, take it."
That's cool. Yeah. Well, you and I, here's my question for you, because you and I are basically the same age. You're born August of 73. I was September of 73, and I have zero desire to go back to college. People have asked me, I have my bachelor's degree. I didn't go any further than that, but people ask me, you know, would you want to go back to college? Even going back to like a Bible school or seminary or anything like that. And I have no problem with learning. I want to learn every day. I'm reading books and taking notes, and certainly in my faith walk, learning more and more about God every day. But man, taking tests and doing homework, I don't want to go back to that. So tell me why. Tell us why you're doing this. Or is it just literally to get, you know, that degree and finish what you started? Or is there a greater why in this whole journey?
Well, you know, there's lots of reasons. I've always wanted to go back and finish what I started. And I think a lot of people, a lot of athletes especially, would say that they want to do it to make their parents proud.
Sure.
And, you know, my mom has always wanted me to go back and graduate. She was for years and years would say, "Why don't you do it? Why don't you do it?" And so when I told her that I was doing it, it was the happiest I've ever seen her. So she was thrilled for that. But, you know, obviously I was never a guy that wanted to do homework. Even when I was in school, I didn't really do a whole lot of homework. And I hated it. I hated to read, and I hated to sit there and take tests. But I'm at such a different stage in my life where I'm at now. You know, I'm more at peace because of God. I'm more at peace because of my wife. And I just feel like I can accomplish more things because of where my head and my heart is. You know, when I sit here and do homework, I get excited, and my wife thinks I'm crazy because I get excited to do homework. And if you would ask me this when I was a 20-year-old in college, I would have said homework. I've asked somebody to do it for me.
Exactly.
but now it's like I love doing it. I love just the challenge of, you know, if I get a C on something, I'm not happy. But back then I was thrilled to get a C just because it was passing, you know. But if I get a C, I'm not happy. I want A's and B's on all my work now. So I feel like I'm not that I'm smarter. I know more obviously, because of I'm older and I've been around and I've seen a lot of things. But, you know, I know how to apply myself a little bit better now. So the homework stuff, that doesn't bother me. I really enjoy it.
No, that's good. That's really cool. Well, congratulations. Hopefully we will watching you next year walk across and get that degree. And that'll be a really awesome moment. Danny Graves is our guest here on Sports Spectrum's podcast. Let's go back a little bit in your baseball journey, because now, I mean, you played for many years, and I want to talk about your career pitching, and now you're also doing broadcast work and just finished up the 2019 season with the Cincinnati Reds radio network. So if I asked you 15 years ago, which I believe was the last time you pitched 15 years ago in the majors, if you'd be calling major league games someday, is that something that you saw coming while you were a player in the big leagues, that broadcasting might be a natural progression for you?
No, not at all, Jason. It's funny because, you know, I always had a great relationship with the media. I always enjoyed talking with the media. And if I had a bad game, I didn't run away from them. I always wanted to face the music. But I never would have thought that I would want to sit and talk about it and, you know, critique certain players or you know, however the team's playing. I never imagined that. But when I, going back to the college days, I had a good buddy of mine who did radio for our baseball team. He asked me to, we had a day off at the College World Series, and he asked me to join him for, to be a color commentary for one of the games. So I did it just like messing around. And he told me that I have a future in this if I wanted to. So for that, from then on, I'm like, no chance. I don't want to do that at all. Well, after I retired, we talked again, and he got me together with an agent at the time, and then it just took off, you know. And I've always been told I like to talk, and I talk too much sometimes, and it kind of works out great in this profession, because I get paid to talk about baseball, you know, something that I love to do. But yeah, if you would ask me when I was playing, I would have said zero chance that I would do that.
That's funny. Well, baseball has been such a big part of your life, and part of probably as long as you can remember growing up. But your story is really an interesting one, just of you being born in South Vietnam and coming to America. I think our listeners would love to hear that story. Can you share that with us?
Yeah. So obviously the Vietnam War was going on at the time. My dad was a sergeant in the Army, and he'd been there for quite some time. And my mother was, she worked at the U.S. Embassy there in Saigon. Mm. And so they ended up getting married and had me and an older brother. And I only lived there till I was 14 months old, so obviously don't remember anything. We got out of there right before the fall of Saigon, you know, and I didn't find out until 2006 when I convinced my mother to go back. We went back and realized that the reason why we took off, and thank God we got out at that time, and we were in the apartment, and right before the fall of Saigon, there was shots being fired all around the apartment that we stayed in, or the barracks, whatever you want to call them, where all the soldiers were staying. And she told me that a bullet went right by my dad's head and hit the wall. And he said, now we got to get out of here. And we just grabbed whatever we could and took off. And I'd never heard that story. You know, I didn't hear until I was 33 years old, Jason. So it was like a shock to me, because when my dad was alive, he passed away in 1999. Mm-hmm. When he was alive, he didn't talk about anything. He didn't talk about the war. He didn't talk about his time in the military, nothing. And I was so afraid to ask him. I didn't want to talk about it because I didn't want, you know, any memories or anything to come up, and just, you know, being a touchy subject. So, but when I took my mom back in 2006, we went with HBO Real Sports and Brian Gumbel. We did a story there, and we went with the Vietnam Veterans Memorial Fund to try to help detonate 900,000 tons of live artillery still from the war. And I mean, this was so many years after the war had already ended, and there was still live artillery that was underneath the ground, you know, bombs and rockets, missiles that were just coming up and exploding and still killing a lot of people over in Vietnam. So we tried to raise money to help take care of that and help locate where these bombs were, so that, you know, they could be detonated and not hurt anybody else. And while we were there, we visited a guy who his house was a brick house, and it was probably 500 square feet. A week before we got there, one of the rockets came up from underground and exploded and blew up his whole house. Mm. So the person, one of the guys that was with us, actually donated money to rebuild his home, and it cost $2,000 to rebuild it. And he was, I mean, I've never seen somebody so happy and so emotional because they were getting a new home. Mm. It was just amazing. It was an amazing time. I can go on and on. We could talk for hours about my trip there, but I guess long story short, yeah, it's a very unique story. They are trying to play baseball over there still. We built a field over there for a high school, local high school. And so they were trying to get baseball going. It's tough because badminton and soccer are huge there in Vietnam.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of them that are still trying to play now. I actually have contact with some people on Instagram who just go by Vietnam baseball, and they send pictures and all these things about the tournaments that they're in. They're trying to compete with the other Asian countries, which is tough right now, but at least they're trying, and I'm excited about that. But
that's cool.
Not sure if there'll ever be another Vietnamese born player in the major leagues. I guess I have that going for me.
Yeah. The only one ever in the history of baseball to be born in Vietnam. I don't want to keep harping on this, but I'm just fascinated by it. What was that experience like for your mom to go back there? I have to imagine all sorts of range of emotions were going through her mind. And, you know, you were just a baby when you were leaving there, but she was there, and you're kind of reliving this almost through her mind. I didn't see the real sports doc, so I haven't seen or watched that, but what was that like for mom?
Okay. So I'll send you the link to that, and so that you can check it out.
Yeah, we'll put it in the show notes too, so people listening can go watch that.
Absolutely. Oh, that'd be awesome. That'd be awesome. So basically, like, you know, she wanted nothing to do with Vietnam. When we left in 1974, it was a disaster, obviously, and she never wanted to go back. And she had family there still. She had a sister and a brother that were still living there. So she would keep in contact with them, but she wanted nothing to do with Vietnam. She thought that if she ever went back, that the communists would keep her and not allow her to leave the country again, even though she was an American citizen. So, you know, like she really thought that no way a Vietnamese woman could go back and then leave. So I convinced her, the embassy convinced her, the Vietnam Veterans Memorial Fund convinced her that it's completely safe to go back there. So we went back, and it was very emotional for her. There was a lot of times where I would just look at her and she would have tears in her eyes and just not say anything. And I was so afraid to talk about it. You know, I just wanted her to be vocal if she wanted to. But thankfully, Bryant Gumbel, who is awesome, he got a lot of stuff out of her. You know, he knows how to ask the right questions to not make her feel scared. So he got a lot out of her. And we got on camera live her and her sister reuniting after 30 years, which
was
oh my gosh, it was absolutely amazing. I mean, you talk about people crying that weren't even involved. Everybody that was there were crying. So it was just an amazing, it was absolutely incredible. And she loved it. She loved every bit of it, Jason. And she's like, I wish I would have came back here sooner. I wish I would have brought your father back here because he loved this country. And I'm like, really? He did? Like, he never talked about it. And she said he didn't want to talk about it. Right. And then that was it. And I was like, I'm not going to say anything else. But she liked it so much that she went back last year and took my oldest son to back there to see how it was. And
that's great.
We actually went back to that apartment that I was telling you about that that the bullets came through.
Yeah.
We went back, and the people that lived there let us come in and check it out. So that was pretty cool too.
That's awesome. What a great story. Yeah. Danny Graves is our guest here on Sports Spectrum. You mentioned your dad not wanting to talk about, you know, or you even being afraid to ask. And I think that transfers over to our faith sometimes. We're afraid to ask people about faith. We're afraid to talk about faith. most people don't get asked about it, especially athletes, unless they're talking on a podcast like this to me, because they're asked about sports and their performance and all that. So I'm going to ask you, why don't you tell us about your faith? It says child of God in your Twitter bio, D Graves 32, as well as Instagram. So tell us about being a child of God and where that faith began to kind of take shape for you.
Yeah. So, you know, when you mentioned that most athletes, people don't know the beliefs of most athletes, I can tell you back when I played, it was even worse. Like religion, God was not talked about a whole lot back then. You know, we had chapel every Sunday, and to me at that time was, okay, go to chapel and then do whatever you want during the week, and then go to chapel again and do whatever you want, and then everything would be fine. And you know, I had a coach and some teammates that tried to, you know, bring me to their side and see what it really is to have a relationship with God. And I just kept saying, everything's great. I'm getting contracts. I'm getting money. I'm having this great career. I'm okay. Let me just, you know, do my thing. And so I continued to do that. And of course, things went downhill. Obviously I let the enemy in too much. And, you know, where I am in my walk now, I look back and I'm thinking, oh my gosh, that was a disaster. What was I thinking? Why was I such a bad person? Mm. A lot of people would say that I wasn't a bad person, but I was kind to most, but I still wasn't living the way that I think God wanted me to live, wanted all of us to live. So I was doing things that I shouldn't be doing. Shouldn't have been doing during my first marriage. It got so bad after we got divorced in our first marriage that I just was drinking and doing drugs and doing whatever I could just to ease the pain and not have to worry about why I was so depressed and why I was so just mentally out of it. Hmm. And,
at what point in your life is that, Danny, when that's all happening? Is it post-career or during your career?
No, it was during. It was towards – 2003 is when it started. That was the year that I was a starting pitcher that year. And all the other years I was a reliever. That was a year that I started, and I just wasn't very good. So mentally I couldn't handle it. And that just unfortunately was the year that I – was told that my wife was having an affair. So all this stuff was going on like, all at the same time. And my only way out, Jason, was after the games, I was going to go do whatever I wanted to and get as drunk as I wanted to and wake up the next morning and go to the ballpark and act like everything's okay. So, I did that for quite some time. I finally was encouraged to see a psychiatrist, and I did and got on medication and things started to get better. But then we ended up getting divorced. You know, I tried to stay with her for a little bit because we had children together and but that didn't work out. So I ended up getting divorced. And 2006 was my last year in the big leagues. I couldn't get back into baseball. So it kind of started spiraling again. You know, I started to, let me just do what I want to do. Because I can't play baseball anymore. I ended up going to independent league up in Long Island, New York for Long Island Ducks. I played there for a year and that was a disaster. That was awful, you know, on the field and in the clubhouse was great, but that was probably the worst year that I had mentally. And, emotionally, just everything was awful. I laid down on the side of the street, not caring what would happen to me, after a night of just binging. And thankfully one of my teammates picked me up and carried me inside. And at that moment, I'd say less than a week later, I got introduced to my current wife. Okay. We had mutual friends. One of my teammates' wife was friends with her husband when they were married. We had the same stories basically. And, so they just wanted us to talk and to see where it went from there. And we actually talked on the phone for 2 months before we even saw each other. We ended up, you know, being together, and she's the one, Jason, she's the one that made me realize what it was to have a real relationship with God. And I know that's always long winded to get back to God, but I was, you know, trying to get everything out there in a short amount of time. But she was my path. She was who God sent to get me on the right track. And, you know, I don't believe in coincidence since where my faith is right now. I believe that God does these things. It's not a coincidence that something happens. It's not a coincidence that when I laid on the side of the road, next thing you know, my wife, current wife, comes into the picture, yeah. You know? So, you know, just, and we've been in this walk together, and it definitely took me a little while, but she introduced me to who I really wanted to know. And, you know, like I said before, going to chapel every Sunday, I thought that that's the God that I knew, but learning more about him daily and trying to learn more, that's not who he wants us to be. He doesn't want us just to show up on Sunday and act like everything's okay, you know, because the enemy works every day of the week. He just doesn't work on Sundays. Mm-hmm. And so that's, you know, I mean, that's where I'm at right now. I'm just so at peace with everything that is going on in my life. And it's because of what the Lord has blessed me with, this family that he's blessed me with. And my wife is just absolutely amazing. And, you know, I try to, when I live my life now, and you mentioned on my Twitter handle, the child of God, that's what I want people to see. I don't feel like I need to go out and brag that I'm a child of God, but right. That's what I want people to see in me. You know, I want people to see that I shine the light, and I'm trying. And of course, there's many times that I fail. We all fail numerous times, but I think it's understanding how to correct that, you know, and repenting.
Absolutely. When you were in an independent league, you know, I talked to a lot of baseball players, a lot of athletes, and we always talked to, when I worked at ESPN, we always used to talk to a lot of players who wanted to get into broadcasting, and we would always tell them, play as long as you can, because when your time is up, you'll A, never make the money you made, but B, you'll know to walk away. It sounds like you were hanging on, especially if you look at, what were you, 35, 36, whatever it was, as an independent league player. I wonder, if you had that faith that you now have today, do you think you would have stepped away earlier? Because I'm not putting words in anybody's mouth, but it sounds like baseball was still trying to maybe be the God of your life as you were hanging on. Can you kind of walk us through what your thoughts were where you were hanging on there and still pitching in the independent league?
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly it. Baseball and the salary of baseball was my idol, yeah, at that time. That's what I wanted to be, because for so many years, that's what I was known as, a baseball player. I wasn't known as a child of God. I wasn't known as just somebody that, you know, that worked a regular 9-to-5 job. I was a baseball player, and that's what I thought I needed to be. You know, so 2007, I was in an independent league making $2,000 a month, which, you know, after taxes is not a lot, and living in New York,
yeah,
that's nothing. So, I mean, that's how badly I wanted to try to get back in the game. And you know, after meeting my wife and talking through things, she encouraged me, if you want to still play, try to play in 2008, and we'll see where it goes. Well, I end up signing with the Minnesota Twins at the end of spring training, and started in instructional league. I mean, extended spring training, went to single A, double A, and triple A, and finished the year out there. And I wasn't upset that I didn't get to the big leagues or didn't get called back up, but I still enjoyed playing. So we said, let's give it one last shot. I ended up talking to Drayton McLean, who was the owner of the Astros at that time, who is a huge believer in the Lord. He loves the Lord just as much as anybody that I've ever met. I told him where I was in my walk, and I just said, you know, I would love to try to play. I don't want to play for anybody else. I just want to try to play for the Astros because it's close to my home in San Antonio. And if it doesn't work out, I'm content with that. Well, he says, why don't you come to spring training then? Why don't you come and come to big league camp and throw a little bit and we'll see where it takes us. And I almost felt like this man knows the Lord way more than I do. And I can't say no to it. So I ended up going. I stayed the whole spring training. I threw a little bit. It didn't throw great, but I didn't throw awful either. And then the Astros asked me at the last week of spring training that, you know, they said, we're going to send you out of big league camp. And we actually want to know if you want to stay with the organization and maybe do something coaching in the minor leagues. And I said, you know what? This is my time. This is my time to go home and be a non-baseball player anymore. And Jason, I was totally happy with it. Didn't cry one time, didn't have a tear come down. You know, a lot of guys that leave the game after a long time, and I get it, I understand, but a lot of them break down and can't handle it. But I was just so happy where I was in my life and in my walk with the Lord that it didn't bother me. It didn't bother me one bit because I didn't want to be known as just the baseball player anymore. I wanted to be a child of God. And whether that was on the field or away from the field, I was fine with it. So very content with my walk away from the game.
No, that's good. That makes sense. And it's kind of it shows that the joy that you had as you started to begin your walk with the Lord was a genuine joy and not just like a fleeting happiness that comes and goes and ebbs and flows up and down with what it is to be a baseball player. So that's really cool stuff there, Danny. Let me ask you this. I'll talk a little baseball just for a couple more minutes here on the podcast. I'm a sports junkie, so I love hearing stories. You made two All-Star games, two-time All-Star, 2000 and 2004. Give me some stories. Give me your favorite All-Star game story maybe that you can share with us from one or both of your appearances and pitching in the game.
So in 2000, I was only in the big leagues for, I guess, three years maybe at the time, or close to 3 or 4 years at the time. And yeah. So I get named as an alternate because Greg Maddux was named to the team and he backed out because he had just pitched or he was going to pitch or something. So whatever, they needed another guy. They needed an alternate. So yeah. Bobby Cox asked me to be that guy. And so I came and it was amazing because I walk into the clubhouse and my locker was next to Al Leiter. Mm-hmm. I can't remember who was on the other side of me. Maybe it'd been Carlos Zambrano or Miguel Cabrera. Okay. One of them. Anyways, so I'm just sitting there in awe of what's going on around here. Well, John Smoltz, the game was in Atlanta. John Smoltz was hurt that year, but he was in the clubhouse, and he walked up to me and congratulated me. And I was like, oh, my gosh, John Smoltz just said my name. And I was just totally, like, floored. Al Leiter looked at me like, who is this guy? And because at the time I looked so young, and I remember after that, you know, you signed a bunch of baseballs, you like thousands of baseballs in the back room, and yeah. You're with the American League All-Stars as well. Well, David Wells, who was starting the game for the American League that year, mm-hmm. walks up to me. He's like, he said, dude, you look like you're 12 years old. What are you doing here? I was like, well, thanks, I guess. But I mean, he was totally cool about it. He thought it was so funny how young I looked, but it was a great experience. I got to watch the Home Run Derby just with Jim Edmonds, who I had no idea knew who I was either. Yeah. You know, I got to sit with him. I even have pictures of us sitting at the backstop at the old Turner Field. Like, nobody was hanging out with me, which was okay. I didn't mind. I was trying to take it all in. But Jim Edmonds came and sat with me, and we both had our video cameras, which obviously nobody has anymore these days. But
oh, I remember.
It's phones now, yeah. So we had the video cameras out, and oh, my gosh. It was just an amazing thrill. I remember Roger Clemens and Curt Schilling came up and said hello to me, and I was just in awe that these guys were even talking to me, knew who I was. But so the game, Leo Mazzoni told all the pitchers who was scheduled to pitch, and this was kind of the schedule they're going to try to keep unless something happened. So I was scheduled to pitch the eighth inning, and Randy Johnson was starting the game. Kevin Brown was supposed to come in and pitch second. Well, Randy Johnson has a 1-2-3 first inning, like I don't know, 10 pitches, like, so quick. Kevin Brown wasn't ready to go. So they called down to the bullpen and said, ask Graves if he can get ready to go in for the second inning. And I'm like, I'm ready. I didn't even throw a pitch, Jason. I said, I'm ready. So I threw, ended up throwing a couple into bullpen and then threw some more, you know, the 8 pitches out on the mound. I was just so amped up that I didn't care if I was ready or not. I wanted to get in this game and get out of the game. I didn't want to sit there and wait 7 innings to pitch in an All-Star game. It would have drove me crazy. So thankfully I got to pitch in the second inning and I put up a 0, which was pretty exciting.
That's great.
Yeah.
There's so many stories. I mean, we could talk for hours. I can't imagine.
Yeah.
That 2004 game, did you get into that one as well?
No. So the story with that, Jack McKeon, who was my manager with the Reds when I came up, when I got traded over, he was the manager of the All-Star game, from being with the Marlins the year before.
That's right.
So he asked me, he's like, hey, do you want to pitch? And I said, you know what? Actually, Jack, I really don't. I'd like to sit and watch and take this one in, because I didn't get to, like, everything happened so fast in the first one, you know? Yeah. And I just wanted to sit there and watch. And he's like, okay, you won't pitch. So then I guess it was about the 7th or 8th inning, they called down to the bullpen and then they said, okay, ask Eric Gagne and Graves if they want to split this inning. And I looked at Gagne and I'm like, dude, I really don't want to pitch. and he's like, okay, I'll pitch. I'll throw. I'll go pitch. I mean, people wanted to see Gagne anyways. They didn't want to see me. Like, that's the thought that I had. This guy, that year, he had like 72 saves in a row. It was ridiculous. And he was welcome to the jungle. He was the guy that was just unhittable. I don't know if he might have won a Cy Young that year. Anyways, yeah. They want to see him pitch. They don't want to see me pitch. So I was like, I don't want to pitch. I just want to watch. So it ended up being me, Jason Schmidt, Armando Benitez, and LeVon Hernandez. The 4 of us didn't pitch. We wanted to watch, which was great. I absolutely enjoyed watching every bit of it.
That's awesome. I'm looking at the roster here as we talk, and just some of the guys. I'm just going to name a couple names from – this is the 04 team. It had Pudge Rodriguez, Alfonso Soriano, Alex Rodriguez, Derek Jeter, Vlad Guerrero, Manny Ramirez, Ichiro, Piazza's on the National League team with Pujols, and just some legendary names. Ken Griffey Jr. was a teammate of yours. Barry Bonds, Sammy Sosa. That era, unfortunately, is so frowned upon now, I think, in a lot of ways, but because of the steroid era. But I just I don't look at it that way. Like, that was where baseball came back. I was, you know, in my mid-20s, I guess, in 98 when, you know, and you were in the game at that time in Cincinnati, you know, McGuire and Sosa, and then watching guys like Clemens and Bonds and Piazza and all these amazing players and Griffey, and just – it was such a great time, and yet the steroid cloud just hinders, I think, a lot of people's judgment on how we're supposed to remember that era, what guys to put in the Hall of Fame and what guys not to. It's such a bizarre time. How do you look back? Obviously, you were pitching during that time, but now you're an analyst and you're a broadcaster. So what's your opinion on us fans and how we can look back at that era?
Well, you know, my take on it, I agree with you, first of all, what you were saying about, you know, the 98 season, the home run race and bringing everybody back to baseball. That was an amazing moment for Major League Baseball. And to be a part of that, you know, when you're on an opposing team in the same division as those two guys, it's like you don't want to lose and give it up to them. But it's okay if you do, because of – this is what baseball needs to bring everybody back after, you know, the strike a few years prior.
Right.
But my take on that, I don't fault any of those guys who did it, who wanted to enhance their performance, because let's all be honest, it wasn't illegal at the time. You know, it wasn't banned. It wasn't frowned upon. I think even – and I say this with speculation that I believe that Bud Selig knew everything was going on and he was okay with it because it brought people back to baseball. That's what people wanted to see, the home run race, these giant humans hitting balls extremely far. And I was totally okay with it because, you know what, at the same time, I had the opportunity to do that. I could have done that. to sit there and compete with those guys. I chose not to. But the way I look at it now is once the rules got put in place and once there's certain medications, certain things that you cannot take, certain vitamins that you cannot take that are on the banned list, if you get caught with that, you need to be gone. You need to be gone. It's not just – to me, it's not just the short suspension. I think you need to sit out a couple years and you really take a look at what you're doing to the game now, because rules are rules. Back then, they weren't the rules, so do whatever you want to do. Now that they are rules, you know what you should be taking and shouldn't be taking. So if you get caught and you say, I didn't willingly take this, well, I try to give people the benefit of the doubt, but I don't believe it.
Yeah.
Because how do you not know that you're putting something in your body unless you have somebody on your team that's trying to sabotage you? But, you know, I just don't think that that's where the game needs to be right now. And unfortunately, when these guys get popped now, it reminds everybody of the steroid era. But the steroid era was legal. Right. So I'm not mad at anybody for doing it at all. Barry Bonds, all those home runs he hit, he still had to hit the ball. It didn't make him a better hitter. He was always a good hitter,
right.
You know. And same with McGuire. I mean, even if he didn't do it, he'd still hit a lot of home runs. But it was just something that the fans enjoyed. It's something that kept these guys on the field, and it's something that got Major League Baseball and Bud Selig a lot more money.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And it brought the fans back too. I mean, you talk about that 98 season and the fans were back, you know, and the Yankees running 99, 2000, 2001, and then Bonds breaking the home run record. Like, baseball was back and people were genuinely fascinated and interested in it. So
absolutely.
Yeah, I think there's good in that respect. And I think you make a great point, Danny, as we close here, and thanks again for your time. Last couple questions. I think the first question might be an interesting one to ask. So 22-year-old Danny Graves in 1990, I guess that would be 95. You made your debut in 96 at 20, almost 23 years old. 22-year-old Danny Graves somehow goes through the DeLorean time machine and is talking to 46-year-old Danny Graves today. And you have that one piece of advice, that one, gosh, kid, if you could have just gotten this, it would have been a different kind of journey for you. What would that advice have been that you would share to your younger self?
Well, and so there's a couple things. Number one, and it's not just because of this podcast, but I would say listen to your teammates and the coach that tried to get you on the right path with the Lord. Because to me, results and all that other stuff, baseball stuff, wouldn't have been such a big deal to me. It wouldn't have been, because I would have been happy with what the Lord has blessed me with.
Right.
That's first and foremost. Number two, I would say, you know, I wish I would have worked a little bit harder off the field as far as taking care of myself as I got older. You know, I just didn't really care much anymore. And we could always go back and say that's because I didn't know who I was. You know, I didn't know, I didn't have any spiritual background. I didn't have the Lord like I needed him. So those couple things I would go back and say, you need to get this right this time.
No, that's good. I think a lot of young people think that they're never going to get older and they just kind of do what they want. And I think the more we can invest in our future, both, you know, athletically and taking care of our body, but obviously financially and places like that. But without a doubt, spiritually, even at that young age, it's so vital. It's so important. Let me ask you this as we close, Danny. Great conversation here. I really appreciate your time. What is God teaching you today? What are you learning today where he has you in this season of life right now? What are you learning from the Lord?
Well, really the main thing, and you know, I love the church that I go to. It's Community Bible Church here in San Antonio. Our pastor is Ed Newton. The message that he throws out every week, I feel like it's directly to me. One of the big things that I've picked up on in the last few weeks, and you know, I don't have a favorite verse or two. I go with what I'm feeling each week and feeling each time that I hear a new message. And the one that stuck out to me a couple weeks ago, John 3:30, he must increase, but I must decrease.
Yeah.
That was a big problem with me. Even after I retired a little bit, having some humility and, you know, being humble and that know that it's not about me and it's about our Lord. And, you know, life is not about the glory of our name, but the fame in his name. And that to me is what I'm trying daily to remember, that it is not about me. Whatever we do in life, whether I'm going back to school or working for the Reds or whatever I'm doing, it's about being able to shine that light for him, you know, and that's one of those things that I wish that I could just get out there to people, that we all need to understand that we are blessed with so many things. Some people have little things, but it's still blessings from our Lord, and we need to glorify him a little bit better each day.
Well, if you walk into the Sports Spectrum offices, which are really just a small little office, I make it sound like it's ESPN, but it's not. But if you walk in there, you'll see a scripture up on the wall, and it is that scripture. He must increase, but I must decrease. John 3:30.
Is that right?
It is absolutely right. It's the pillar of what our ministry is founded on at Sports Spectrum and in our parent company, PAO, Pro Athletes Outreach, is the increase. John 3:30. So. Pretty cool stuff.
Wow.
Yeah.
See, I just got chills. That's the Holy Spirit right there. That, to me, that's like I said before, it's not coincidence.
Right. No coincidences at all. That's really awesome. I love how God works and in the way that he works. Yeah. Danny Graves, this has been great, man. Thanks so much for your time. Let's do it again next year. And listen, hopefully next year we have you back on and you're a graduate. And that would be awesome to have you across the aisle with that degree, man. Thanks.
Thank the Lord. That would be great.
Yes, absolutely. Yes. Congratulations on everything. And thanks for joining us here on the show.
Jason, thank you for having me, man.
Great stuff there from Danny Graves, the former Major League Baseball pitcher. We covered a lot of ground, not only his returning to college, but his story of being born in Saigon and his mom going back. And we will link to that piece that he mentioned that HBO Real Sports did back in 2006. It's a Dropbox account that Danny sent. It's a link, a public link that everybody can sit there and play and watch the video of. I watched it and was just blown away by the piece that HBO did back in 2006. So you can watch that. It'll be in the show notes. So you can just click that and spend 15 minutes even more learning about Danny's story. But we also covered a lot of baseball ground and his stories of pitching and then not pitching in the Major League Baseball All-Star Game in 2000 and 2004. And certainly I thought his view on how to look back at the steroid era and the sort of time that he pitched from the late 90s into the early to mid 2000s was a good way to look at it, I guess. You know, I obviously, you know, people were doing things that were quote unquote legal for many years that weren't necessarily good for you. And in this case, baseball profited from these players doing things that at the time were not illegal or at least tested. And once they became tested, that's when you saw guys get busted and get in trouble. And really fascinating look at the baseball side of Danny's journey and his faith journey as well. I mean, what a deep, dark place he was in at the end of his career, being in the Independent League in Long Island and basically drinking and drugs and depression. And all of a sudden he's introduced to this woman and God does the rest. And suddenly Danny is just, and has been now for a while living for the Lord. So lots of awesome stuff here. Thanks to Danny Graves for being here on the show. You can follow him on Twitter and Instagram. Just search Danny Graves or look up the handle at dgravy32 and let him know that you heard his story here on Sports Spectrum's podcast. Thanks to Danny, and thanks to you for listening. As we mentioned in the beginning of the interview, if you have a guest idea or a story idea that you'd like us to cover, please email me, jason@sportspectrum.com. Maybe you know of an athlete that loves Jesus that we haven't featured. Maybe you know of a story in a high school or middle school or some ministry of some sorts that features sports and intersects with faith in Jesus. Let us know about it. jason@sportspectrum.com. And lastly, go to our website, sportspectrum.com. That's the website to go to. Make it a bookmark on your computer, on your phone, and check it out every single day. New content featured there on the intersection of sports and faith over at sportspectrum.com. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time here on Sports Spectrum's podcast. Have a great rest of your day.